This is Straight Out of Vegas.
Straight Out of Vegas!
With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell.
Pay that man his money.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Live from the Vegas Strip, the pregame show America has always wanted. With RJ Bell out, here's Bernie Fratto.
Why is it in America we are so enamored with the world of sports? We go to games, we watch them on TV, we argue about them with our friends, and regardless of race, religion, or political affiliation, sports have a way of galvanizing our communities, and well, they dangle the ever-elusive quest to find the victory within, and the belief and hope for a better day ahead. Now, we don't have royalty in our country. See, our entertainers and our athletes, they are, in fact, our royalty. And March Madness is, well, it's merely an extension of that. It's a chance for anybody with a pulse to live vicariously through their heroes. And you can even place a wager on the outcome. And whether or not you do it for entertainment purposes only, monetary motivations, or to simply feed your competitive spirit, you've come to the right place. On that note, welcome back to another edition of Straight Out of Vegas. RJ Bell is on reconnaissance. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com for a free rate quote. This is the weekend edition of Straight Out of Vegas. As you know, Straight Out of Vegas airs Monday through Friday right here on Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Channel 83 from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, with RJ Bell, Steve Fezzik, and Brad Powers, and of course, Jonas Knox. Regardless of the season, know this. As RJ Bell says, we promise to deliver the Vegas truth to you every Saturday night. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you've always wanted. Not exactly a slow news day. In fact, the last 4 days have been sensational. They call it the Sweet 16. Been kind of a chalky tournament so far, sleepy. And even in the round of 16, 11 of the teams in the Sweet 16 either won their conference regular season or won their conference tournament, and the remaining five, well, they averaged 29 wins. So very chalky tournament, including a number one seed today who got to survive in overtime. I'm talking about Virginia against Purdue. I realize folks will categorize this as one of the worst bad beats of all time. Maybe they're right. I've always said overtime is where dogs go to die. Heading into the game, Purdue head coach Painter was 0-7 straight up, 2-5 against the spread versus 1-3 seeds. But Purdue had covered their last three. But how about that Carson Edwards? Now, last game, you probably already forgot, he had 29 points and 5 3-pointers. Today, oh, nothing. 42 points, 10 3-pointers, 71 points, 15 threes in his last two games. But there's an old saying, a star may win you one game, but a team might win them all. Virginia somehow gets it done. To this point, Sleepy, they were only allowing 52 points per game in the tournament. They win 75-70 in overtime. Virginia gets the cash, lay the wood. Oh, boy. They win by five. There were no fives out there. There were fours. There were four and a halves. Virginia wins 75-70. Purdue, no Final Four since 2000. When they lost, by the way, for scoring at home to Wisconsin, who was coached by Dick Bennett, the father of Tony Bennett. Meanwhile, they're whipping it up in Virginia. They avoid the Ziggy. They avoid my wrath because I said they don't have the DNA to win it all, and I'm sticking to that. But Sleepy, they got it done today.
They did, but I actually felt really bad for Purdue. I mean, the game was right there. I thought they were going to win, Bernie. I got to be honest with you. Both teams really deserve to lose that game, as you mentioned.
I love that.
Carson Edwards, actually, you know, he played his heart out, not only just for this game, but, you know, the last three games. I think his stock, obviously, Bernie, goes up for the next level.
Well, there's no question, and he'd been talked about. He lived up to the hype. And, you know, look, it's kind of like a redemption situation with Virginia. And they were down the first half. Purdue gets off the bus in their jack and threes. They make 8 3-pointers in the first half. But give Tony Bennett, Virginia's coach, head coach, a lot of credit because he decided to be more aggressive in covering the perimeter with length. And that adjustment worked for quite a while until it didn't. But what it did was it enabled Virginia to take control of the game. So give it up to Virginia heading to their first Final Four since 1984. And we'll see what they do. I'm not backing off on my prediction. I do not think we'll be crowning Virginia as a national champion. A number one seed went down today. Sleepy Gonzaga, Texas Tech. Something had to give. You had the number one offense in the country, squaring off against the number one defense in the country. The classic irresistible force versus the immovable object. And give it up to Chris Beard and the Red Raiders. My goodness. They were picked to finish 11th in their conference. They win 14 games in the Big 12, a new record for the school. Texas Tech has never been to a Final Four. They are ranked first in defensive efficiency by KenPom, just 84 points allowed per 100 possessions. Give that some perspective. One of the best college teams I ever saw was 2009 North Carolina when they beat Michigan State at Ford Field. I was there the last year I lived in Michigan. That Roy Williams team, who won a national championship, was allowing about 91 points per 100 possessions. So give it up to Texas Tech. There was a 13-minute stretch, Sleepy, in the second half where Texas Tech held Gonzaga to 3 field goals. This is Gonzaga. 90 points a game they're averaging. So Texas Tech gets it done, wins outright as a dog, 75-69. And I got to tell you, even down to the red uniforms, this team is eerily similar to the Bobby Knight Indiana teams of the 70s in their form and in their function and the way they play and the way they do all these things that don't show up in the box score. Texas Tech, I believe, they're still 10-1 to win this thing. That might be real good value to grab.
Bernie, let me touch on something that you just brought up that I think is really important. You talked about Gonzaga having a particular drought in the second half. It was from the three-point line. If you go back through and you look at the box score, go through each and every possession. I did this. Texas Tech locked them down. Gonzaga was absolutely terrible from the three-point line. But that's what Texas Tech can do to you. That's what their defense can do to your offense. They force you to go ahead, take outside contested shots. Texas Tech, number one, Bernie, three-point defense. If Duke wins tomorrow, this is just a prediction, they're going to have to play Texas Tech, and that's a weakness for Duke. We might touch on that in my best bet.
Let me tell you what else impressed me about Texas Tech today. You want to get out and run? They can if they have to.
Yeah.
You want to get into a shootout? They can if they have to. But I think Chris Beard realized at halftime, I want to get back to playing Texas Tech basketball, right? Even though the game was basically even at the half. I think it was 37-35 at the half, if memory serves. But Texas Tech comes out in the second half, and all of a sudden, they kick it to a different gear. Their length, their size, their ability to defend the perimeter, their ability to get opponents out of their comfort zone and truly make the other team uncomfortable. I marveled at that. These guys are live. I'm not a prisoner of the moment. I'm not overreacting. They went to the Elite Eight last year. Now they're in the Final Four. Do you really want to get on the floor against these guys?
I would. And another thing, too, to note in that game, Bernie, they were actually really, really solid with their free throws in the second half. That was what kept them in the game, and that's what helped them pull away.
In our first cut of the night, the guys talk about the Sweet 16, and RJ points out the importance of coaching, experience, and veteran presence when it comes to handicapping and watching how the most knowledgeable coaches manage Sweet 16 weekend. This is where the pressure really starts. See, there's an art form to it, and Brad Powers, by the way, agrees, and he would know, as he is the man with the college knowledge. Let's take a listen.
The better coaches are able to exert that. It's able to show their superiority in the first game of the weekend because there's, you know, 3-4 days rest before. Whereas when there's a 48-hour turnaround, not as much time, thus coaching doesn't matter as much. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely agree with that.
So this set of Sweet 16 games, whoever you think the better coaches are, you weight that heavier than you will on the Saturday-Sunday game.
I do, RJ.
You guys might be interested to know that John Calipari is 11-3 against the spread the first game of the Sweet 16 weekend. Roy Williams is 13-5 against the spread. Coach K, 11-6 against the spread. That's a combined 70% against the spread. Now, what do these stalwart coaches have in common? Multiple. That's plural. National championships. Meanwhile, Purdue's Matt Painter, 1-4 against the number in that same situation. Rick Barnes of Tennessee, only 3-4. And Mark Few, 2-5 against the spread. What do those respected coaches have in common? 0 national championships. So food for thought in future years. Information like this, this helps you win long term, and that should be your goal in this business. All right, let's get to Michigan State Duke tomorrow. Duke minus 2. Look, I don't think they're going to have Duke is going to have Cam Reddish, but there's some things here. I'm amazed at what Michigan State's doing, Sleepy. When right now the ball is going in the basket for them, right? They're getting off the bus. They're shooting the ball extremely well, and when that happens, everything looks better. But still, no Kyle Arns, no Langford, Nick Ward. My man Mark Wilson tells me Nick Ward will play tomorrow. We don't know how much he's going to play. We don't know how effective he'll be, but he'll suit up. A couple of things to notice before you dive into this game, because I think you're getting Duke about as cheap as you can get tomorrow. I like them. It's not my best bet. Give Michigan State credit. They've covered 11 in a row against ranked opponents. But here comes the big but, Pee-wee. They're only 1-11 versus Duke. But Izzo 7-2 in the Elite Eight. Coach K 7-1 in the Elite Eight. Coach K is also 12-1 versus seeds 1-3. In the round of eight, coming back from straight up against the spread wins, and that's Michigan State. By the way, Duke hasn't really they haven't even covered a game yet. But look where they're at. So they're, like Nolan Ryan once said, the mark of a good pitcher is when you win, when you don't have your best stuff. They're 3-0, man. They're right where they need to be. At the end of the tournament, they don't ask how, just how many. You got to get 6 wins. I think Duke is undervalued, and I think they pound Michigan State tomorrow. But it's not my best bet.
Well, I'm excited for this game, so I'm going to keep my comments very, very I'm not just going to say a whole lot about this game.
All right.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to save this game for our best bet, but here's what I will say. Michigan State has one area they need to focus on tomorrow, and they can hang in this game if they win the turnover battle. That's their weakness. They don't create enough turnovers, Bernie, and they turn the ball over a little bit too much for my liking, but I'm going to save this game for my best bet segment.
All right. The other game tomorrow, Auburn, Kentucky. Naturally, this game has a cloud over it now because the Tigers forward, Chuma Okeke, we now know he has an ACL. That's a huge loss. He had 20-11 against North Carolina. And Auburn was riding the joy of not being in the Elite Eight in 32 years. Kentucky, minus 4.5. Auburn, 20-1. If you're feeling saucy to win it all, Kentucky, a very cool 8.5-1. What did we say about Coach Cal before the tournament? Since 2012, the winningest coach in the Big Dance, 25 wins. Here they are in the Elite Eight. The way I see this game, Sleepy, Auburn's literally going to have to make at least 12 to 15 three-pointers to hang tomorrow. I have a lot of respect for Auburn and what Bruce Pearl's done. They're confident. They're physical. They're intense. They don't fear anybody. You kind of called it, Sleepy, after they pounded Tennessee in the SEC championship game. Do you really want to get on the floor against this team? But I really think the Okeke loss is huge. I will say this, though. If you want to get down on the game, we both kind of agree. I think there's going to be some steam coming on Kentucky. I think this game crosses 5, gets to 5.5. You can buy the half point to 6. Maybe gets to 6. Here's why. In the history of the tournament, the number 5 seed, when they reach the Elite Eight, 7-0 against the number. So Auburn doesn't have to win to cash your ticket.
And let's not forget that P.J. Washington came back last game. That wasn't really factored in the line. I think that will be factored in this line. We just talked about Auburn's, obviously, their injury to their main guy. I mean, that was a terrible injury. But, Bernie, here's one angle I'm going to look at this game. I think Auburn comes out focused. I think they come out energetic. I think they come out excited to be here. I'm looking at Auburn in the first half, but I think they're going to finally realize Kentucky's just too big, too strong. Auburn's going to fail in the second half. I'm going to take Auburn first half in this game.
Interesting. Well, these two teams have played twice already. Everybody knows Kentucky beat them by 27 in Lexington back in February. They completely controlled the boards on both sides. In the second game at Auburn, Kentucky prevailed 1-2. Reed Travis did not play in that game. And when you juxtapose these two teams, Reed Travis is back. Again, no Chuma Okeke. Big loss for Auburn, but P.J. Washington and his 7'5" wingspan is back. I think Kentucky wins the game. It's just a matter of whether or not they hang the number. Baseball is here. Do you have hopes? Hope springs eternal that your team might go from what I call crap to contender? Hang around. We'll tell you if they have a chance to do that. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas. We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? Means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Sleepy, baseball is here. Even Bryce Harper's already hit his first home run. And one of the things about baseball is at the beginning of the season, like no other sport, hope springs eternal. And if past is prologue, you just need to look back for the last few years. Last year, the Oakland A's, they won 97 games. The year before, they'd only won 75. And every year there's a team like this. Minnesota, the year before that, they won 59 games. They were 36 games back in the AL Central in 2016, but they won 85 games last year and made it to the wild card. Boston did it the year before that. The Rangers did it the year before that, and so did the Cubs, and so on and so forth. There are three teams I'm hearing getting some buzz, but I'm not in agreement. One of them is the Royals. They won 58 games last year. Some folks feel if it breaks right for them because the AL Central is weak, anything could happen. They've got a decent everyday lineup. They've got a young kid in Alberto Mondesi. Jorge Soler, you know, is coming back healthy. You still got Alex Gordon and Brian Goodwin and Hunter Dozier. Rotation's not bad. Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, Jake Junis. The Royals are a long shot. Do not waste your money. I don't think they'll be 500. I've got them winning about 76 games.
Well, don't look now, Bernie. Royals 2-0 to go ahead and start out the season. The bats are going. Royals, they scored 13 runs, Bernie, the first two games. Royals again tomorrow. They're going to be a favorite. They're going to have Lopez on the mound against the White Sox. Great start for the Royals, Bernie. Enjoy it. It won't last long. I think the Royals pitching rotation, scary bad. I like Duffy, but the rest, no way.
They pick up Elvis Andrus. Their offense will be okay. They're not bad defensively. They're just kind of average across the board. Here's the problem that the Royals face more than anything. A little team called the Houston Astros.
Yeah, that's a
problem. So then they're looking at a wild card. And you know that the Yankees and or Boston, one of them is going to win the East and the other is going to be a wild card. So, again, a lot of folks, they want to put down a little money to win a lot. You work hard for your money, folks. Don't bet long shots when it comes to baseball, especially when it comes to baseball. It's a long season. Anything can happen. Another team that folks are talking about a lot, the Cincinnati Reds. Now, they made some decent short-term pickups this offseason. They get Tanner O'Rourke, Sonny Gray, Alex Wood. Those are three legitimate rotation additions. They pick up Yasiel Puig and Matt Kemp. But that should tell you something if the Dodgers no longer want them. So, you know, you still got Joey Votto and Scooter Gennett. They've got a decent team. Of course, as Bob Lemon once said, the two most important things in life are close friends and a good bullpen. I don't know who's going to save games for them, and we know how important that is. Sleepy, the Reds, again, a long shot. I believe they'll finish last in the National League Central. They won 67 games last year. They might win two or three more this year, not much more than that.
You know, I like the Reds lineup. Here's one way that I'm looking to attack the Reds this season, Bernie, and that's probably playing them over. You talked about Wood. You talked about Gray. Now, they came from ballparks where they were pitcher-friendly. This is not a pitcher-friendly type of ballpark.
No.
I like the fact that the Reds boosted. I like the fact that they got Puig and they went out and made some moves. I think the Reds score a lot of runs, but I also think they give up a lot, Bernie. Kind of agree with you. Probably finished last in that division.
They're 70-1 right now to win the World Series, and you know, they're lesser odds to win the National League East and National League Central and, of course, the, you know, National League. But World Series, no, not so much. Now, one of the teams I want to talk about that's obviously made a splash because they signed this little unknown player named Manny Machado. They gave him a few bucks. They gave him about 300 million reasons to be happy. Padres, 66-96 last year. What was interesting is how their win total, season futures win total, rose dramatically. The send-off number was 73. When the rumors of Machado became reality, it went to 76, topped out about 79, 79 and a half. That means if you got the worst of that number, you'd have to then you bet the over. They'd have to win 80 games. That's an improvement of 14 games. just simply isn't going to happen. We do know this about the Padres. They have an outstanding farm system, and when you have a highly ranked farm system, stuff like this is possible. The Braves, they went from 72 wins in 2017 to 90 wins in 2018. The Cubs, the aforementioned Cubs, went from 73 wins in 2014 to 97 wins the next year. The Pirates, now this has been many years, 2012, they went from 79 to 94 wins. And one of the all-timers, this really goes back a long way, 2007, Tampa Bay won 66 games that year, won 97 in 2008, and got to the World Series. The problem is you can load up on young talent. You give yourself a chance to make a huge year-to-year gain, but it typically doesn't happen. It happens more gradually. Young players reach the big leagues. Sometimes they have an immediate impact. Sometimes they don't. But this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I think the 2019 season is a year premature for the Padres. 2020 looks like a breakout year. They've got young pitchers. They'll be called to the big leagues. But again, crazy things can happen. If you're feeling saucy, you can get the Padres at 80-1. Again, I don't recommend, you know, following the groupthink echo chamber and diving in on that.
Here's the one area that I'm actually concerned about with the Padres, and it would be their pitching. But here's the one thing that I actually like about the Padres, Bernie. I could actually watch them on TV now if they're actually on TV. I think the Machado is going to be a big help. I think that is a slight overreaction within the you know, the total market. I think that's kind of a little bit high. 79 wins seems rather high to me. They are a favorite tomorrow, and I got to be honest with you, I do like them against Jeff Samardzija.
When you look ahead to the World Series, and we all know time flies. It arrives before we always want it to. Yankees are pretty solid at 6-1. The usual suspects, Boston at 7-1. The Astros 7-1. The Cubs, they're back in the mix at 8-1. There might be some value there, Sleepy. Thoughts on the Cubs?
Not really. I mean, I just don't see them getting going against the AL and getting a win in a series.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one other team I want to touch on quickly, because I watched their first two games and the excitement is off the charts. They're all wearing Harper jerseys. The stadium looks like, you know, a Queen concert from Live Aid. It's incredible. I say that in the best way, Philly. It's awesome what's happening there in terms of the energy. They're 12-1. I'm not buying it. I think it's going to die off. The Mets really do have the best pitching in the division, and I think the Nationals are going to be heard from. But the Phillies are kind of exciting right now. Grabbing them at 12-1, at least they're realistic. When you look at that everyday lineup, man, that everyday lineup is the real deal. And Gene Segura, I mean, it's one after another. Reese Hoskins.
McCutchen.
JT Realmuto. McCutchen homers in his first, you know, at bat. And they've got, you know, he's got, you know, playoff DNA. All right. There's a little thing called March Madness, and I've got an Inside the Frat House commentary I want you to hear. And I want to talk about why, collectively and individually, we love March Madness so much. You know, they say the game, it's just a game that's like saying the, you know, the Grand Canyon is just a hole in Arizona. It's actually a lot more important than that. So in a minute, we're going to hear my Inside the Frat House commentary. But first, let's go to Brian Finley and his dulcet tones with the latest.
Thank you so much, Bernie. We had two angst-filled, riveting Elite Eight games on Saturday. Virginia Ducks defeat coming back to beat Purdue 80-75 in the South region. Cavs DeAndre Hunter scored four critical points in the extra session. And Virginia on to the Final Four for the first time since 1984. In the West region, Texas Tech stifles number one Gonzaga 75-69 with that back-breaking defense. Tech had seven block shots, nine steals, forced 16 turnovers, and the Red Raiders are into the Final Four for the first time in program history. NBA on Saturday, Devin Booker puts up 48 points, but the Suns fall to the Grizzlies, 120-115. James Harden racked up 50 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, as the Rockets bash the Kings, 119-108. In Major League Baseball, the Dodgers squashed the Diamondbacks, 18-5. LA had 19 hits. Cody Bellinger went 4-for-6 with two homers. The Mariners beat the Red Sox, 6-5. Jay Bruce hit a three-run jack for Seattle. Online Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car. So visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Bernie, back to you.
Hey, Brian, quick question. TV ratings for March Madness at a 28-year high. What do you attribute that to?
I think one of the main factors for that is the Zion Williamson effect. You talk about what a lot of writers are putting together in articles as far as Duke is traditionally a program that's a love-hate relationship, right, when you think about where they stand in the national spotlight. But Zion is a generation-type player, and he's transcending. He's a transcending figure in the sport. So even if you don't like Duke, it's a kind of a figure who you just kind of draw your eyes to, whether you like Duke or not. And I feel like that's sort of helped build the viewership.
Yeah, no question. He's been a flashpoint. Ryan Bershinger, same question. Your thoughts?
I think overall, it's because we keep seeing the higher-seeded teams advancing, so we're having these bigger programs advancing farther in the tournament, so we're not seeing anybody like Loyola or Florida Gulf Coast or George Mason, where I love those Cinderella stories, but they don't carry with them a much larger audience. So you have these bigger programs like Duke and Michigan State that continue to advance, and with them, they bring their audience with them.
Let me see if I can piggyback on this, folks. Wake the kids, alert the neighbors. Grandpa, put on pants. It is time for another rousing edition of Inside the Frato House. You know, it's that time of year, March Madness. And madness seems to be an apt name for the multitudes of ecstatic fans who ripple across America. In fact, it goes well beyond the United States. I'm told Italian folks in Italy spend their nights glued to the TV screen to watch the American college teams play, despite the 6 to 9 hour time difference between the United States and Italy. Well, that's cool for me because I'm Italian. Cool for Moretti, too. He played a nice game today for Texas Tech. Will you ever wonder why we are so passionate about sports? Why does watching someone else compete at a high level give us such strong feelings? Even when our teams or our favorite athlete is on the losing side, we crave more. Despite negative emotions, we can't wait for the next game, the next match, the next NCAA tournament, especially if we've taken the time to wager a shekel or two on the affair. We live and die in the ups and downs. It creates nervous tension. We're addicted to this. I've talked about this before using baseball as an example. Every 15 seconds, there's failure. In baseball, the pitcher fails to throw a strike. The hitter fails to make contact. The fielder fails to make a play. The hitter fails to reach base. The vicious cycle repeats itself for 3 hours until someone wins the game, so it teaches us two things. Failure is never final, and you can't reach the promised land without setback. Now, nothing exemplifies this more than March Madness. 68 teams enter, only one remains. 20 gut-wrenching days later. See, this whole thing starts in our brains. Our brains contain mirror neurons, and these brain cells fire when we watch the players battling on the court, cutting across the defense with a no-look pass, shooting from the three-point line, or blocking the shot of another player. See, these mirror neurons, they make us literally feel what the player is feeling, to a mild degree, of course. But, in fact, our brains are reenacting internally with what we watch. It's as if we are almost playing the games ourselves. In other words, many fans, they live vicariously through the players and teams. But that's not enough. We want more. For a lot of us, athletics have been an integral part of our lives since elementary school. So, no matter how far you advance in your athletic career, it's usually never enough. We examine our treatment of athletes, how it borders on hero worship, and how people go from being competitors themselves to becoming spectators who project their hopes, fears, and passions onto the people they watch. They even feel a kinship and unspoken fellowship with the competitors on stage. Having a bet on the game heightens the experience. So does filling out a bracket. It enhances the viewing participation of the event, and it feeds our competitive spirit. With its buzzer-beating one-and-done format that can turn unknown college kids into larger-than-life heroes and celebrated programs into jealous bridesmaids, March Madness has a broad, something-for-everybody appeal. As anybody who's ever filled out a bracket can attest, fans feel as though they're sharing in something bigger than the games. The infectiousness of the underdog, the agony of defeat, the soul-searching in one shining moment, and yet, no matter how faithful their loyalty to their alma maters or how close they sit to the court, these fanatics always want to be a step closer to those who are actually competing. And this will always be the primary foil of the average fan. Only the athlete in the arena can truly experience the magic. But balancing the two can be difficult for even the most well-adjusted spectator. For some, the thrill is grounded in seeing human outliers perform athletic feats that few can replicate. For others, nothing can top the collective high of rejoining and gathering your friends and like-minded kinfolk, and let's not poo-poo the David Goliath aspect of these games, because with every underdog victory, you can bet people use it as fuel for their own lives, their own personal endeavors, athletically speaking or otherwise. With every buzzer beater, we're reminded anything is possible. With every vignette about the hardship of a player who never gave up in spite of long-shot odds to get on the floor, we are retold that we still are authors of our own legacy. In the end, few things can match the uniqueness of the month-long phenomenon known as March Madness. The lure of the unscripted outcome, the bragging rights of the winners, the constant reminders to onlookers that they are witnessing something that is far from ordinary. It's why we watch. It's why we've always cared. It's why we always will. That's why year in and year out, March Madness continues to justify and elevate its own frenzy. And now, given the advent of legalized betting, things are going to get even bigger. The rampant fanaticism of the big dance. Of course, we've known that in Vegas here for years. In the end, 149 million brackets, coast to coast, 400,000 people descending upon Sin City, and a betting handle that now dwarfs the Super Bowl. The nationwide appeal. The fierce rivalries, the bitter defeats, the sensational victories when it looked like all was lost. The hope for a better day. In the end, March Madness is life. Sleepy?
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to get to our next segment, because we are going to break down the NBA. We are going to give some best bets, and you're going to revisit one of the college games we talked about earlier. And by the way, you've been really hot on your best bets. I want to remind folks that last week you had UCF plus 13 or 13 and a half. And what I remember more than anything is you actually thought they can win outright.
Yeah, I did, and I thought that that was just a brutal matchup for Duke. Obviously, we talked about Taco Fall on the show. He was the main reason why Duke really struggled on the inside. So, you know, I really wasn't surprised at the score. I was actually a little heartbroken that UCF didn't win. They played their rear ends off. I was actually rooting for him and came up short.
The games are designed to break your heart. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about Duke. The guys have a great cut. Having to do with Duke, they're sort of the centerpiece of the tournament. And after that, we're going to dive into the NBA, because I have got a bold prediction about a team not a lot of folks are talking about that could really upset the apple cart. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas. We're back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. Our final segment of the evening, we're going to get the best bets. We've got some NBA thoughts. But before we do, Duke, this polarizing team, still the favorite, 3-1. They could have easily been eliminated in the last two games, but they're not. They're sort of like this, you know, masthead of college basketball, whether people love them or hate them. Coach K has actually coached 99 tournament games alone. In this cut, RJ and Brad talk about betting favorites and getting caught up in the groupthink echo chamber and the court of public opinion. Here's why. There's real irony to the Duke situation, because they were prohibitive favorites to win the whole thing pretty much all year. So how can it be when they advance to the Sweet 16, their odds decrease? Let's take a listen.
This is what Vegas, the betting market, and if you're able to read the market properly, does best. We can tell you objectively what's the opinion of Vegas. So let's start with the simple part. Before the tournament started, Brad Powers, Duke was the favorite.
Yep, they were.
One of your oft-repeated lines was the second biggest favorite in the last decade. And what did that mean? It meant Duke entering the tournament. What was their odds?
Duke was right around plus 250, RJ.
And of all the teams that's entered the tournament in the last decade, only the undefeated Kentucky team had better odds. So relative to the competition, Duke number two in the decade. They won two games. Now entering the tournament, they needed to win, let me think, wait, six. So they're two games closer to their goal. They're one third of the way through. I mean, think about that. If you were going like to a, like law school was 3 years. You're done after your freshman year. It feels like you're closer to your goal.
Yep.
And the odds on Duke before were, again, plus 250?
Yep.
What's the odds now?
Duke's 3-1, RJ.
So plus 300.
Yes.
So Duke's won two games, and Vegas says, we think you have less of a chance to win the tournament than we did when you entered the tournament.
Look, it's easy to be prisoner of the moment. It's easy to form impressions that appear real, but they can fool you. Remember, Coach K is 77-22 all-time in the NCAA tournament. These are do-or-die games, win or go home. That's the dynamic, the pressure, the expectations, they're through the roof, especially for the Cameron Crazies. And yet, just like last night, even though Duke did what they do best, they didn't cover, but they did what they do best, and that is survive and advance. By the way, Duke, 9-3 in Elite Eight games and a sparkling 7-1 in Final Four games. I wouldn't write them off just yet. Before we get to our best bets, I want to make a case, Sleepy, for a little team called the Boston Celtics. They're currently 25-1 to win it all, 7-2 to win the East. And let's give that some perspective. Vegas feels there are really only four teams that can advance to the finals. The Bucks are 2-1, and I got to think the Greek Freak sprained ankle is going to help matters. The Raptors are 5-2, and I don't think Kawhi Leonard can carry them. The Sixers are 3-1. Boston 7-2. This is just to get to the finals. After that, it drops off like an anvil in a Bugs Bunny cartoon. The Pistons are 100-1. Let's break this down. The Bucks 2-1. Okay, they've never won a champion. They've never done anything. The Raptors, boom, ditto. Sixers, the last time they won a championship, Reagan was president, and it was his first term. So it looks like right now Boston will have to get by Indiana in the first round. It'll be 5-4. If, you know, Boston will be a 5-seed, Indiana will be a 4-seed. But I think this Boston Celtic team has DNA, you know, championship DNA, as it were, and they don't even know it. They're talented. The problem is they're inconsistent. When they bring the toughness and they bring the effort and the defensive intensity, they can beat anybody, all right? They got a great lineup. They get, you know, Tatum, Smart, Horford, Hayward, Irving. Any of them can score 20 points in any given night. So they got to the finals last year, the Eastern Conference Finals, without Gordon Hayward or Kyrie Irving. I don't see where they can't do it again.
I don't know, Bernie. Here's my dilemma. You make a really good case, but the fact that I'm going to take the greatest team to ever grace the floor of the NBA hardwood, Golden State Warriors. They're minus 250, Bernie. I might go out and go get myself a paper route tomorrow so I can get as much extra cash to throw down on the Warriors. Bernie, it's going to take multiple season-ending injuries for the Warriors to not win the title. This is the best team we've ever seen in the NBA of all time.
As long as they're healthy, you're right. But one can dream. I'm not even a Celtics fan. It's just a thought. Just a thought.
You got good,
you know,
guys.
We've seen upsets before. Mm-hmm. By the way, if you like to bet the NBA, what do the Nuggets, Rockets, Warriors, and Orlando Magic all have in common? Since the All-Star break, they've been under machines. That's under the total. Combined 55-11 to the under, those four teams. Nuggets, Rockets, Warriors, Magic. That's 83%. Sleepy, let's get to everybody's favorite part of the show, best bets. And before we do, real quickly, we only got a couple minutes. You had a thought, a contrarian thought that I respect, that maybe the Purdue game, the Purdue loss, was not such a bad beat, you know, after all.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad beat. It's pretty simple, Bernie. You win if you have Purdue and the game does not go to overtime. The only chance Virginia has to cover that game is if it goes to OT. Well, Virginia made that happen. Last second foul in OT after Carson Edwards turned the ball over with 1.2 seconds. Purdue was only down 3 points, so they still had life. Virginia had to miss a free throw. They didn't. They made two. That happens every day. I've won thousands. I've lost thousands of games like that. Virginia covers. Forget about it.
All right, speaking of covering, you nailed UCF last week. Great call. Plus 13. They almost won, all right, which you said you thought they could do. What's your best bet for tomorrow?
I'm going to go ahead and jump to next Saturday. I'll be here on air with you, Bernie, to go ahead and face the music or collect the cash. I'm going to take Texas Tech against Duke if Duke wins this game tomorrow next week. I think Duke is a terrible matchup right now for Texas Tech. Texas Tech is going to force them to shoot the three ball. Duke can't do it. Take Texas Tech on the money line outright. Forget the points.
There you have it. If Duke advances, take Texas Tech, fade Duke next Saturday. Sleepy's been hot. I'm going to go to the NBA, the Mavericks, the Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks catching 12 points tomorrow at Oklahoma City. Yes, Luka Doncic is not going to play. This is a bad line. It's off by at least 4 points. I've run the numbers. I'm not going to bore you with the details. Mavericks 4-1 against the spread in their last five road games. 5-1 against the spread in their last six meetings. Thunder scuffling. By the way, did you know the Mavericks are 6-0 in Sunday games and Thunder's 1-7?
Well,
grab Dallas tomorrow plus the 12 and get rich, kids. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. But before we go anywhere, I want to thank my LA broadcast team, Ryan Bershinger. He's so cool, mosquitoes refuse to bite him out of respect. Iowa Sam, he's a wise man who reminds us that money can't buy happiness, but it can buy beer. Brian Finley, dude is so smooth, he's smoother than JB Smoove. And, of course, Sleepy J. You heard his best bet? He loves Texas Tech next week. As long as Duke advances, he's a man who continues to serve his country with honor and distinction. By the way, we got hockey playoffs coming up. After next week, we'll focus a lot more on NBA. We've got Masters. We're not just a one-trick pony. You join us every Saturday night. All right, 11 p.m. Up next, Jason Martin.
Straight out of Vegas!